Girl, Zenni is back. I'm super excited to talk about this because I've used them and I love them. Fam, Zenni is an online eyewear shop. We're talking prescription glasses, sunglasses, blue light lenses, starting at under 30 bucks. I cannot tell you how affordable this all is.
And it's so easy. You go to Zenni.com, you pick a frame, you upload your prescription, they ship it to your door. You don't have to worry about appointments. You don't have to go to the store. They're not upselling you at the counter.
No, and they've got this amazing try-on technology that, like, you pick the glasses that you want, you look into your camera, and then, like, you can move around and you can, like, and they move with you. The try-on technology is really what sold me.
And it's also really important. This is your new face.
Yes, exactly. Fam, they are so affordable. I love this talking point. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you start asking, why don't I just get them? I was going to get one pair. I got four.
See, this is what we're talking about. Get the fun ones.
Yes.
Get the pair that only matches, like, your one favorite special outfit. Who cares?
That is great advice, GP.
Do it. For under 30 bucks, like,
I know. They've got over 150,000 five-star reviews, fam, and I'm one of them. So get on it. So fam, if your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time.
Go to Zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order.
The styles do sell out, fam, so don't sit on it.
That's Zenni.com/podcast and the promo code is podcast15.
Yes. So I was leaving the gym the other day, and as I was walking away, I swear to God this happened. I'm not making this up. There was a lady coming into the building with her tiny little dog.
Yeah.
And the dog wasn't cooperating. So I sort of, like, just scooted around them. And from behind me, I hear her go, Morticia, Morticia.
Cute.
Morticia.
Because, you know, my first question was, if he doesn't tell me the name of this dog, yes, by the end of the story.
The dog's name was Morticia.
I love that.
I was laughing so hard.
Mortish. Hello, Patrick Hines.
Sam, don't forget to join us on the Patreon. Exciting, exciting, exciting news.
Guess what, everybody?
Full video episodes on Patreon. Our editor, Jennifer, has, like, she learned how to edit video so she can edit our videos for our Patreon. They look so freaking good. We're starting with the Rocky Mountain Mortician murders.
Yeah.
If you want to just do audio, that's fine. Nothing changes. If you want to see us do video versions as well, they are also going to be there.
Yeah. I just want to say I love Jennifer so much. Jennifer edited Let the Women Do the Work.
Yes.
I've
yes.
been working with and loving on Jennifer for years. Just, like, I'm so excited. I'm so proud. Yeah. I'm just like, thank you, Jennifer.
She's incredible.
For everything.
We love her so much. The videos look great. Go check it out. What's the other thing?
YouTube.
Oh my
Guess
goodness.
What?
Yeah. Also, if you like video on video, please go follow us on YouTube. We have over 250,000 subscribers there.
Yep.
Sometimes I just go, like, to, like, check on them,
yeah,
and I end up watching them for half an hour.
Come on.
Because we're so engaging. Like, we're so fun on the tube of you.
You just want to go say hi and check up
yeah,
on them.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, you guys.
Hey, guys. How's
hey,
it going?
Hey, sexy people talking true crime. It's True Crime Obsessed podcast on the YouTube.
Yep.
What are we talking about today?
All right. That new show, Dirty Rotten Scandals.
Yeah.
They have one on the Dr. Phil show. It's two parts. We're doing it in one.
Doctor, tell it like it is. Phil McGraw.
I would like for people to have a real idea about Dr. Phil.
They are there to get you in and out so fast. Have a taxi cab literally sitting out there. I bawled my eyes out in that cab.
They're set up to fail. They're manipulated.
We had to do absolutely everything that we could to get them there.
I had no say in anything at all the entire time we were there.
My traumatic experiences were seen as entertainment.
Fear is permanent every day.
It was the cult. You feel like you're working for the devil.
Technically, he's not a real doctor, but, like, he's Dr. Phil. That's his whole brand.
He is no stranger to controversy, and television's Dr. Phil is under fire once again today.
I had low expectations for this. I did not, because it's like a USA Networks thing, I didn't really know how it was going to go. It is really good.
Well, they got Dave Holmes to sit down. Do you remember how we were all introduced to Dave Holmes?
On MTV. He was like a VJ.
Well, no, he was, but he lost the wannabe a VJ competition to that guy, Jesse Camp. Do you remember Jesse Camp?
Yes, of course.
And, like, Dave obviously should have won.
Didn't he become a VJ?
Oh, Dave's doing great. Like, he ended up doing everything. He worked in music forever. He still does. You know, we've seen him in a lot of talking heads, but it's just funny, like, how the world was introduced to him.
Yeah. He's also gay. He's older.
Great.
He looks great.
He's great.
Was like, are you my future?
He's got, like, such a great knowledge. I just love seeing him. I'm like, oh, we'll be okay.
Yeah,
Dave Holmes is here.
Yeah. Well, we're at the Boston Globe. We learn
this tipster, a minor celebrity, had read our stories and said they really needed to talk to us. They said, you should investigate Dr. Phil. We were like, what the f*** is that? I mean, like, that's ridiculous. We're serious people, and we are not going to investigate Dr. Phil because that is not a serious thing to investigate.
I want to spend the next 2 hours investigating who this minor celebrity was.
Yeah.
Was it Dave Holmes?
Like, I don't know.
Who was it?
I don't know.
And I love that they had to say minor celebrity. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
Well, I also want to say about Dave Holmes, what he says about Oprah is that, like, she kind of pulled a bunch of shady shit and unleashed some terrible people onto the world.
Yeah. Except for Susie Orman. She was great.
Well, he mentioned Susie Orman, and I'm like, wait a second. I think of two things when I think of Susie Orman.
No girlfriend denied.
Kristen Wiig's perfect impression. Yeah. And her perfect cameo on Big Love.
Oh!
Because Nikki, played by Chloe Sevigny, has a spending money problem.
Oh,
and
shit.
And she calls into the Susie Orman show.
Stop
and
it!
And Susie Orman's like, Nikki, what did I tell you about those credit cards, Nikki?
Come on, girlfriend.
It's so good. And also Dr. Oz, like, where's the big expose documentary about him? Because he's awful.
That is definitely coming. Like Oprah, no question.
And then Dr. Phil, and it's like, Oprah girl, what was going on over there?
Oprah, like, owes us some answers.
A ton.
No joke.
Guess what? We're never going to get them.
We're never going to get them. But we learned that, like, the Dr. Phil was introduced to Oprah when she went through her, like, beef scandal. Do you remember this?
Barely.
It was, like, the Mad Cow thing. I don't really remember it either, but, like, she was talking shit about beef. She got sued to shit. Dr. Phil was apparently, like, her, like, service psychologist.
Well, but no, he had a business called Courtroom Sciences. So he helped her, like, how to navigate being deposed or whatever. And so Oprah liked him, so that because of that, but that's how they met, because she was dealing with a lawsuit. And then she had him on the show all the time.
Dr. Phil went from being an occasional guest on the show to being a regular guest on the show to being a fixture on the show. Within a couple of years, they gave him his own show. And immediately, like, his face was suddenly everywhere. He became like Oprah in that you don't need a last name. And then when she left, he was on top.
And then he went from being an occasional guest to a regular guest to a permanent fixture. And then she just gave him his own show.
Yeah.
That's how that happened.
You know who also they're not mentioning here is Ayanla Van Zandt. Do you remember her?
No, who's
she
that?
Was very early days Oprah. She was like the original like doctor. She's actually an amazing woman.
Oh, great.
But I
probably know her on site, right?
She's like early Oprah days. And then like, but she was just kind of like a life coach. And then Oprah was going to give her a show, but then said she wasn't ready. So another network tried to give her a show. Then Oprah blacklisted her. And then But then when Oprah was doing her final season, she went to be like, what's Ayanla up to now? And like revitalized Ayanla, like went and found her, brought her back on the show for the last season, then gave her own show on the OWN network.
Oh,
it was Ayanla Fixed My Life, I think. I was obsessed with Ayanla.
Wow. Yeah. How is she now?
I don't know. I don't think this show did very well, but Ayanla was amazing, unless she's not, but I really loved her.
Well, she's not as bad as Dr. Phil as far as I
know. No, absolutely not. Girl, Ladder is a new sponsor. I'm so excited about this because this is all about the making of the workouts accessible.
Ladder is like perfect for me because I need to be told what to do at the gym. I never have a plan. I have no idea what I'm doing. So Ladder is perfect.
Yeah. The other thing too about Ladder is that gym fatigue is real and gym boredom is real. If you go to the gym and do the same thing every week, you're just going to get bored and you're going to stop. With Ladder, you get a new plan every week that builds on the last because you want to like keep getting better.
Yeah. And it's like having a coach right there with you. So in-ear coaching guides you through every set. You get cues, you get like form reminders, which is always a big deal. You get motivation.
And you know, for the longest time I was keeping, you're going to hear me say something crazy, fam. I was keeping a spreadsheet of my progress so I could remember, but Ladder does this for you. The app remembers your weight, your reps, and your sets, which is like, you absolutely need to like keep track of that if you want to keep building strength.
Yeah. And I also just want to say it costs less than $1 a day. So that I think says a lot.
Yeah.
You can get everything you need, but it's like elite level personal training for a fraction of what you pay elsewhere.
I am obsessed. Tis the season to get healthy, fam. Remove the guesswork with Ladder and get a real coach in your ear telling you exactly what to do for every workout. No thinking, everything planned for you.
If you have an iPhone, head to ladder.fit/TCO and take a quick quiz to find your perfect ladder plan.
Use our link to get a free 7-day trial with no credit card and $10 off your first month if you join.
I love it. I'm saying it.
It's the thing that I always needed. Like, please tell me what to do in the gym.
Seriously.
We're with this journalist named Evan Allen, and she is an investigative reporter for Boston Magazine. And
the Boston Globe.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Boston Globe.
That's very, very important.
100%, because my first note about her is like, this woman is not fucking around.
No. If you don't know, the Boston Globe did Spotlight, yeah. has Spotlight. Yeah. And Spotlight, like the movie, is yeah. based on what they did to uncover all the abuses in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So like when you hear the Boston Globe, you're like, oh shit.
You can tell when she gets her teeth into something, she really gives a shit about yeah. it. And she's really into this.
And well, she explains that
in the early days of Dr. Phil, the segments are funnier. They're lighter. The next clip shows he was straight talking Texas guy cutting through the bullshit because he cares about you and he's going to tell you the truth. And it's like a truth that you need to hear. There was a turning point where the tone really shifted.
And he had this vibe of like, he's cutting through the bullshit because he cares so much and he yeah. like really wants to help you and tough love and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And I remember too thinking like, oh, he could be like the dad I never had, like mm-hmm. early on because he... She's right. Like, he went from being this sort of, like, jovial, I'm going to give you the tough love, but I really love you and whatever.
He's a buffoon.
Literal buffoon.
He's like a bully and a buffoon and a loudmouth blowhard.
And maybe he was just pretending in the beginning, but I do remember those, like, early lovey-dovey Dr. Phil days.
Well, they probably didn't get any ratings, which is why we're here. Uh-huh. Like, no one wanted to watch the fluffy, like, totally. Everyone's happy at the end and we actually do help the poor kid who's doing whatever.
Who's his wife? Is it Robin? Because she would be on the oh. Oprah show sometimes. You don't know. You haven't read the biography?
No.
No. I just remember, like, it became, like, a family affair.
Like, someone married this?
Oh, his wife, I think it's Robin, was, like, a fixture with him for, like, from time to time on the Oprah
show.
Well,
she must be in on this, too.
She never got to be on the stage, though. Like, he'd be on the stage, and she'd be, like, in the audience, and they would, like, call on her sometimes.
Didn't Kathy Lee do that all the time?
With Frank?
Wasn't she always, like, weren't they always talking off camera to somebody?
Oh, to Gelman.
Oh, right.
To Gelman, the producer.
Was it like that?
I had such a big crush. Kind of. Oh. And in looking back on it, it very much felt like wifey. Like, oh, let's ask wifey her opinion.
Whatever. I know. The first four years.
Do you need another reason to hate him or you're good?
No. Okay. Well, this is crazy. The first 4 years of the show, he actually was a licensed psychologist.
But then we found that in 2006, he let his license lapse, which means that he's not a licensed doctor. After that, you can see yourself. The show became more sensational, more disturbing.
It's so weird when people let their license lapse for the thing that they're known for.
Well, especially when he has a show yeah. saying that he's Dr. Phil, but he doesn't have a license anymore. So when you go around saying you're like a doctor or like a lawyer, but you don't actually have the license right. because you let it lapse, like you can't do that.
And I wonder if it's just like, oh, I'm on TV now. Because like he would, like we see him talking about, like, I take it really seriously, but it is a glamorous life as he's like
but
doing the...
why let it lapse then?
That's what I'm
that's
saying.
That's crazy.
I think that he was like, oh, I can be done like doing real work. I'll just like go be like a TV star now, you know? Defending him. Like, you cannot be called Dr. Phil. Like, you can't call your show Dr. Phil and not actually be a doctor.
I'm calling him Phil from now until the end of the episode. I'm not calling him Dr. Phil. He's Phil. So, but this is when the shift happens.
Yeah.
Like, this is when it gets more disturbing. Like, we see this thing. It's one of the episodes is called, and these episodes are like 10 sentences long.
Yeah.
It went from like mom's on the edge to my teenage daughter is pregnant and she is convinced it's Jesus. And then we see this clip of this brat being like, I am pregnant.
And it is Jesus.
And it is Jesus. And I'm like, no one's believing this. We're just watching it because it's like.
You know what? They once said that to a lady in a manger. She turned out to be right.
Okay, we're not doing this. But like, who took her seriously? It was like, she really believes that. These are people who want to be on TV.
Who want
a free trip to Los Angeles.
Yeah, totally.
So Emily Jones, however, was a guest in 2011. She was 16 years old.
That's when I wound up finding out that I was pregnant. Me and my boyfriend broke up about a month into the pregnancy. I didn't really feel comfortable with, like, abortion. I felt that it was the right choice to take care of it and hold myself responsible.
Like, she really wanted to have this baby. She believed in herself.
Yeah.
But she lived in a home situation where her fucking piece of shit stepdad didn't want her to have the kid. Her mother wanted to support her. So the mom and the stepdad are fighting all the time. And the mom doesn't want to have to choose between her husband and her daughter. So what does she do? She calls the only logical thing. She calls Dr. Phil.
Right. And I'm like, well, why do you have to choose? And
I know.
Why is it all about the mom? Like, I don't.
And the truth of the matter is, it feels like it's all about the stepdad.
Yeah.
Because it's like the stepdad who's like, she can't have it. And the mom's like, she wants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's my reading that Emily wanted the baby.
And she decides
to keep it.
Right.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, now she's like, this family's falling apart and her mom is so desperate that she calls Dr. Phil. Sorry, that the mom calls the Dr. Phil show.
The Dr. Phil show.
Phil, she calls. But, like, Emily begs her mom not to make her go on the show.
Ugh.
And basically, basically, her mom is basically told, like, if you care about your family, you'll do it.
Like, if you care about my marriage, you will go on the show.
So that's Emily's beginning story. Now we go to Angelique, who was a guest in 2013. Now, this is different because the show came to her.
Because the entire world came to her. Her story is bananas.
It's insane.
In 2011, she was pregnant. A friend asked her if she could come over to, like, hang out. The friend tells Angelique, I've got a present for you. Turn around and count to three. When she gets to two, Emily's like, do you have two butcher knives at my back?
The answer
turns
yes.
Turns out the answer is yes.
I stood up as fast as I could, ran and turned the light on. 911 was called. The cops were there. They could all see two large butcher knives. They also found scissors, disinfectant, the baby onesie, a newborn blanket. That's when I started to realize she had plotted to kill me and perform a C-section on my body to take my unborn child.
To literally, like, cut the baby out of Angelique's body and leave Angelique for dead and take the baby for herself. That's a real thing that happened.
Well, Angelique escapes, and when she calls the cops, they find the butcher knives, the bleach, and, like, all the baby stuff that this person had on her. Like, yeah. this was a 100% real thing. So everyone say she's safe, the baby's healthy, like, yes, that's all fine. But this is all over the news, and everyone wants the exclusive with Angelique because the story's insane.
Yeah.
So she declines everyone because she says that they all wanted to change the story. And I'm like, why? Well, this is the shit you make up. This
exactly.
is like a crazy and say where you'd be like, that would never ever happen. And then it did. Like, what are you changing?
What are they? I didn't even think that through. What are they changing it to?
In the most cynical way. I'm like, this will get you all the ratings you need for the entire year.
Exactly.
This story's crazy.
Well, the Dr. Phil show reaches out and they're like, we want to give you a platform to tell your story on your terms.
We would be honored to have you.
Honored. And she's like, literally, like, Dr. Phil was like the biggest thing. Like, it was literally like being asked to be on Oprah at that time.
In 2013, she says.
Yeah. And so she's like, all right, great. I'm going to take the Dr. Phil show up on their offer. I'm going to go do this.
Right. Because they told her outright, this is your show. You can tell your story however, and it's just a privilege and an honor to, like, be in your presence.
Yes.
And Angelique is like, finally. Okay.
Thank God.
So then we get all of these, like, staff members who have fake names, but they all say the same thing. Like, the show was never about helping people. Phil's an egomaniac.
Yeah.
It's all about ratings. It's manipulative. It's predatory.
We were told to tell them that it's going to be life-changing, that he's going to help them, that they're going to get resources that they would never otherwise get. Everybody believed that he was a real doctor and that, you know, he had the best of intentions for that. It really wasn't until they actually, like, got on stage that it all sort of started to fall apart.
Make all the promises in the world, just get them fucking here.
And, like, do the razzle-dazzle up front. So Angelique, like, they fly her and her baby to LA, and everything is, like, all expenses paid, top of the line. And this is where we meet Jack, the travel coordinator.
This poor guy, I hope that there was a mental health professional on set. Jack really feels like he's reliving some trauma.
Because his job was to make the trip out there and where you stay as flawless and, like, hey, welcome to Hollywood, baby.
Yeah.
Because that's all part of the manipulation. Like, they razzle-dazzle you up front so they can trick you later.
And he literally talks about how, like, they filmed on the Paramount lot. I've been to the Paramount lot.
That's crazy.
It is absolutely...
It's iconic.
It is. And Jack says it too. Like, you literally open the gates and you're going into, like, the Paramount. It's absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. You see, like, the mountains and, like, everything that was filmed there. So, like, I know iconic is overused. The Paramount lot is.
Is absolutely iconic. So, like, that's also part of the razzle-dazzle because, like, what everyone is going to tell us going forward is, like, once you're there, they very much make you feel like you can't leave, and this is all part of it.
Right. And also, everyone who worked on the show was miserable too because they were filled with anxiety, tons of stress. Phil is a nightmare. He's always screaming at everybody.
The thing that's, like, we were talking about this a little bit before we started, that's hard to remember, is, like, I worked in radio in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And this was the culture. It's not like the Dr. Phil show. I'm not defending the Dr. Phil show by any stretch. I'm just saying this is what culture was like back then. Like, you were kind of supposed to hate your job. You were supposed to do anything to get the guest. You were supposed to be awful. Like, this is kind of what the world was like.
Well, it was very, like, Devil Wears Prada, like a million girls would kill for this job.
If you wanted to do anything in entertainment, you were made to feel lucky to be spat on by your boss.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, as someone who also worked in radio.
And Jack is talking just about, like, what, like, life, like, working on the show was like, and talking about Phil. Now, we got to talk about this for 1 second.
Thank you for calling him Phil.
And I don't even have a doctor in front of me in my notes.
Good. Thank you. That means a lot to me because fuck this guy.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Should I do a find and replace for doctor and just put in two spaces?
No, you can just not say it.
I'm going to try, but I read.
It's okay. I won't correct you every time. Everyone knows how I feel. I'm looking directly into the camera.
She found a camera. She's looking at it. But Jack is saying that.
He's a very tall, big guy. It's this sort of direct, booming voice coming at you. and the way Dr. Phil treated the producers created an environment of fear. You don't want to end up in a room with Dr. Phil being screamed at.
He was tall with a booming voice. I mentioned this to you yesterday off mic. The guy that they get to play Phil in the reenactments, because it's all blurry, you don't actually see it, but he is a doppelganger.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did they shave his head for this? Like, he's got the mustache, he's got the oversized suit,
but that's
he's got
such
the beer
a
belly.
Wig. Like, that's such a wig you can get in any costume store where it's bald, but the hair is just going around. Wasn't that his hairdo?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And especially because it is blurry, like, you never really see the guy, but like, he looks exactly like him. They've got the lady who plays his assistant who's wearing the worst wig.
I know.
It's like a drag queen's first night.
Yep.
Party City wig.
Quick drag.
Quick 100%.
Quick drag. Bad news.
She's like, I think they spent all their money on the Phil reenactments, and that was all they had left for the wig.
And I'm sure he was like throwing Oprah's name around too.
Yes.
I'm sure it was a lot of like, don't you know who I am? It was a lot of that, right?
Yep. Girl, our place is back. It's time for us to do what we do and save some lives.
Yeah, we're getting rid of toxicity in our lives, but especially in our kitchen.
Exactly, and that's the danger of traditional nonstick cookware, fam. They are loaded with those forever chemicals. Those are awful.
Yeah, and they're not just in nonstick cookware. They're in, like, air fryers, utensils.
Yes.
And our place is helping you get rid of all that.
And look, you can start simple. They've got this amazing 4-piece cookware set. That's what we got. It's the best way to overhaul your kitchen with multifunctional, high-performance, space-saving pots and pans.
They also have the Wonder Oven.
Ooh.
So this is an air fryer and toaster oven.
Yeah.
It's sold out 8 times. It's made from stainless steel and glass.
Yeah.
I love it.
This is what we use exclusively in our house. I now make myself make dinner for my family once a week. I look forward to using it. I know I'm giving them like the stuff that's good for them. It doesn't have all those toxins in it.
And it's pretty. It's sleek and pretty.
It is pretty. So fam, stop cooking with toxic cookware and upgrade to Our Place today.
Visit fromourplace.com/TCO and use code TCO for 10% off site-wide.
With a 100-day risk-free trial, free shipping and returns, you can experience this game-changing cookware with zero risk. Like how I do once a week for my family.
Exactly. Now we meet Marcy. She was also a guest in 2017. She was 17 years old. And just like Emily, her mother wrote to the show asking for help. And Marcy is a truly heartbreaking story.
It's just horrible.
They all do. All these women do.
I mean, Marcy comes from a very low-income family. Her parents were divorced. Her brother molested her twice when they were younger. And he was taken out of the home by family services. The mom signed away the parental rights. And in the custody of the state, he never finished his sexual offender program. So when he turns 18, he goes and moves in with the dad, who has absolutely no idea how to fucking manage or deal with him. So he's like allowed to just go do whatever he wants. He's like a really, really fucked up kid.
My mom was scared that he was gonna reoffend. She knew he still needed that help. That's why she wrote the show. My mom was like, the Dr. Phil show answered me and, you know, we're gonna get help.
And their mother is scared that he's going to reoffend, as they say. So, like, she needs help. The state didn't do shit.
And they don't have any money. Like, I come from a family like this. I had a brother that did not do anything sexual like this, but needed a lot of help.
Yeah.
And we were in a similar situation. My mom had no money. As I was taking notes in this section, I'm like, I'm kind of shocked my mom never wrote to Dr. Phil. Like, if my mom watched daytime TV in this era, she probably would have, because that was what you were being sold. Come on our show. We'll help you. Not only will we help you in the moment, we will give you all of the aftercare money can buy. We will make sure your family is fixed.
It's presented like a dream come true.
Yes. And that's what Marcy's mom was looking for.
Right. For people in these like dire situations.
Yeah.
So Marcy says that she was in therapy for years at this point, and her mother didn't want her to be re-traumatized. But the show says, nope, Marcy has to come and suffer on TV in front of a live audience, or we won't help you. And so Marcy reluctantly agrees, because she says, I thought it would be good for everyone. Like, this poor girl, at the time, she was a girl, like, just wanting to fucking do the right thing and get help for herself. Like, what is she going to do?
I mean, yes. And once again, like, it's hard to remember how big TV was in the social media era.
Like, Oprah approved. And I keep hitting that home because at the time, it was huge.
It would be huge today.
Like the Oprah book club, anything, the Oprah's favorite things, like then, you know, like all of this stuff. Like if Oprah said you were one of the good ones, then like your life was changed forever.
Dr. Phil was the Oprah Winfrey heir apparent. You know what I mean? Yes. So we get another little piece from Angelique about being on set. They're making you feel like royalty, like making you want to be there.
Until you get there and then they bully you and call you names or manipulate you.
Well, but what they also do is they separate the kids from the adults. So right. Emily, the one that was pregnant at 16, gets there with her mother. They separate them immediately. Emily is telling anybody who will listen that she doesn't want to do this. And right. People are literally telling her it's too late.
It's too late.
Making it understood to her that she has no agency here.
And same with Marcy. So yeah. They separated Marcy from her mother. And Marcy and her mother are like in this together for sure. And some random producer starts grilling Marcy about her assault for 4 hours. This person is not qualified to be talking to Marcy at all.
And like wants details about the sexual abuse at the hands of her brother. And then is giving her feedback. Like he wants it said in certain ways.
Right.
Like this is how you say what he did to you.
And Marcy's like, cool, I don't want to do this. Like she could not have been clearer. I want to go home. I want to go home. Let me out of here. And they say, well.
She looked directly at me and she said, if you don't film this episode tomorrow, we won't pay for your way home. We were a low-income family. We didn't have the money to pay for a plane ride back for all four of us. So there wasn't really anything we could do about it.
They've got to get airfare for four of them back to Boston. They're not going to be able to like pay for the hotel that night. Like they are financially manipulating these people in the moment.
They're being held hostage.
Because they literally know that that means that the family has absolutely no choice but to do it.
And what they're doing this to Marcy, who's 17 years old. She's a sexual assault survivor. She's an incest survivor. And this is how they're treating her and her mother,
yeah.
Who's desperate for help because the state didn't do anything.
Right.
To do it, it is so beyond cruel to not even see these people as real humans who are going through shit, who really do need help.
And I was thinking too, these were 5 shows a week. Like, not only do they need constant content like this, and as we're going to hear, they are churning these people out. Like, you're in, you get re-traumatized, you're there for 90 minutes, and they spit you back out into a car, and off you go.
Must have made a fortune.
Yeah, of course. Those 5-day-a-week talk shows with millions of viewers, it's insane.
Yep. So Evan, the reporter, says the way they treated guests on the show is exactly like an abusive relationship. Because
yeah.
They love bomb you, they draw you in, and then they isolate you, and then they bully you and manipulate you once you have nowhere to turn. So they're setting the guests up to fail or be embarrassed or humiliated or whatever.
And if it doesn't look like you're going to fail enough, they're going to set you up to fail even worse. So like, we learn about Todd Herzog.
This poor guy.
I mean, this is unbelievable. 22-year-old guy addicted to alcohol. And once again, they separate him from his family. He's alone in his dressing room where they have left bottles of vodka. And knowing he's going to drink one, he drinks a full bottle of vodka. His family is out on stage first. They're all talking about what a problem. Like, the family is there to get him help. So this guy does literally not drink himself to death.
Yeah.
While Dr. Phil has placed a bottle of fucking vodka in the guy's dressing room, knowing he's going
to
drink it.
And when they bring him out, like, they have to, like, help him come out. This poor guy's crying. He's apologizing. It's so sad.
He's so hammered, he cannot walk without 2 people on either side of him holding him up.
And Phil says, we're going to bring Todd out, and that's going to be a bit of a chore. Fuck you.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I know. It's horrible.
How dare you? So Phil then also conveniently has a breathalyzer in his pocket.
I mean, that is also they make him do a breathalyzer on camera. He does it. He blows a .26, which is insanely high.
And Dr. Phil says, I've never spoken to anyone closer to death. You can take him to the hospital. What are you doing?
Reporter Evan is like, take him to the fucking,
right.
This guy could die right here on your set.
And like, while after Todd blew the .26, like, up come all the scary facts behind Phil about alcohol. It's like, you knew it went exactly how they wanted it to.
Yeah, yeah.
So they didn't help him. They didn't do anything. They mortified him on purpose for ratings. And that's what they did to everybody.
And of course, they deny leaving alcohol out for him.
Right, of course. So Evan, the reporter, breaks down this release form that they signed, saying that Phil does not and will not administer individual, group, or medical therapy. And you can't sue for, like, invasion of privacy or defamation or emotional distress or anything. You give all of your rights away because you think, well, at the end of this, I'm going to get the help I need, or I'm going to get something that I could never afford or whatever. You just figure, like, well, what is Dr. Phil going to do to me?
And also, like, no one reads those things. But by the time you get to the point of signing the release, like, you've been in hair and makeup for 90 minutes, you've been re-traumatized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Then they trick you.
You just sign it. Right. And like, you have absolutely no idea what you've given up. And by the way, the guy's name is Dr. Phil. So like, you just assume assume you're there being treated on national television in front of an audience because the guy calls himself a doctor.
Right. Little do they know, like, that's just the name of the show.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God.
And one thing, I'm not, like, victim blaming in any way, but I'm curious what episodes they watched of the show before they went on. Because
right.
if this was so rampant,
yeah.
I just wonder... I think, I mean, we'll get to this later, that where it's like the reward outweighs the risk.
I also think that when you're watching somebody else be on the receiving end of the, quote, tough love,
yeah.
it looks like he's doctoring, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't think he's going to do it to you. Like, they, and probably the producers have convinced him, he loves you, he wants to help you, he's right. on your side.
And also, like, a pregnant 16-year-old, what can he say? And,
right,
incest,
exactly.
You know,
well, and we get to her. So, like, Emily, the pregnant 16-year-old girl, is, like, she thinks that he's going to, like, help reunite her family.
That's what this is. Her family is fractured.
Yeah.
They are here to have like a big group therapy session to help. It's not really about Emily being pregnant anymore because
yeah.
it's really about like their dynamic is what we're told.
Yes.
So then suddenly like he's yelling at Emily and she's the problem and then we have to talk about like pregnant teenagers and Emily's like, I'm sorry.
And he's grilling her.
Did you get pregnant on purpose?
No, I did not get pregnant on purpose.
Did you want to get pregnant?
No.
And you want to keep the baby?
I'd like to keep the baby.
And raise the baby. But what you really mean is you want to keep the baby so your family can raise the baby, right?
No.
He's attacking her. And like when the camera cuts to her and you see the look, like she is humiliated, devastated. She feels, and she's questioning, like, is he right? Did I actually do all of these things? Am I a terrible fucking person?
And like the bait and switch is so severe because they all thought, even though Emily was like, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, they all thought that this was like going to just be a public group therapy session that'll
yes.
probably be embarrassing, but like that's the point.
Yeah.
But instead, they humiliate the 16-year-old girl who is going through something very serious.
Yes.
And she's told every single person in the building that she doesn't want to be there. And
yes.
she's on that stage against her will.
Yes.
And everyone knows all of those steps before except the studio audience.
Right.
And Phil is still like, this is the way to go.
Right, because the audience thinks that this is what she signed up for. You know what I mean?
Right.
That she was dragged there by her parents to get her ass kicked by Dr. Phil.
And isn't she a horrible evil whore because yeah. she's 16 and pregnant?
Exactly.
And let's judge her and all point the finger and blah,
yeah.
blah, blah.
Yes.
And also Marcy, the sexual assault incest survivor, she's 17. She's also telling everyone in the building that she doesn't want to do this. And she says she didn't even have a conversation with Phil beforehand. So she didn't even know what to expect.
Phil never, oh, I love not calling him Dr. Phil.
So good.
It's so good. It's so freeing.
He's just like a guy named Phil.
Phil.
Which is what he's always been.
Yeah.
Some blowhard named Phil.
Totally.
No offense to all the good Phils.
No,
out there.
Good Phils, I see you, I love you. But Marcy is like sitting there on the stage having to like once again relive for America what her brother did to her.
Well, I also just want to say, because there's no prep with Phil, that's just bad production.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Phil does not say hello before, and he does not ever, like, talk to you again after.
Like, in addition to all the vile, unethical shit, it's just bad production.
He probably just shows up 15 minutes before taping.
No one's allowed to look at him.
Yep, and leaves 5 minutes after.
Powder his nose, and out he goes.
Powder his nose, and out he goes.
You know? And this episode is, all again, more bad production. The episode is called, My Son Claims He Will Not Reoffend, comma, but have I raised a sexual predator? Season 15, episode 150.
Oh my God.
So in the introduction, Phil says that the brother has molested multiple people, by the way.
Oh.
So Marcy goes first. She comes out first alone. They have her out there by herself.
Yes.
Then her mother comes and then they play this interview with the brother on the screen.
We're going to hear from him now. He does talk about some of his violation of you. Are you okay with us playing this?
Yeah.
And you had no idea that they were going to do this.
I didn't. That was the first time I heard him talking about it.
Phil springs this on Marcy with no notice. And then in the moment, she's like a deer in headlights. My heart breaks for her.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're okay with this, right, Marcy? And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
And so now, but they got her. They got her on camera saying yes.
Yep.
And so they, to them, they're in the clear. But meanwhile, anyone with two eyes and is watching this is like, you're manipulating her. She doesn't even know where, like, what?
It's
all the lights in her face. Like, oh my God.
What about hearing him literally describe in graphic detail what he did to her?
Yeah.
Who wants to hear that?
She said, sitting on that stage, I felt like I wanted to die.
What? How would you not turn the channel? If I was who is listening to that?
A lot of people.
Anyone who is like interested to hear what he did to her in graphic detail needs to take a good hard look at themselves.
It's true. Isn't your imagination bad enough?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So, but this is just unconscionable. And He didn't help. All he did is cause harm. Like, what help? What help did he promise that? Like, well, nothing came of it.
He caused harm and, like, raised ratings.
For himself.
Exactly.
And this is when Evan, the reporter, is like, hi, this is child abuse as entertainment. And he's done it a zillion times.
Yes. So Angelique,
who was almost killed by her friend and her baby was almost stolen, ripped out of her.
But cut out with two fucking butcher knives. She's sitting there, like, ready to tell her story. All of a sudden, Phil is blaming her for what happened because she should have had better intuition because she's a nice person.
I felt like he was blaming me. And then all of a sudden, he brings out this book. I was used. Dr. Phil promoted his book and said that it's about people just like me. People that are too nice. But he used the fact that I trusted the Dr. Phil show to do it.
Then rolls out his book to be like, I wrote a book just about people like you. Here it is.
By the way, the audience, he's laughing at her and so is the audience. Because he'd be like, and yet, or like, so you ignored a bunch of stuff, didn't you? And everyone's laughing at her. And she's like, I thought it was going to be an honor and a privilege to have me here.
Meanwhile, Angelique is like realizing that the producers like scrolled through news stories across America to find a case that matched what Phil had written his book about, brought her on the show under a false pretense to create an ad for his book.
And so every single time the guest leaves stunned and like walks out in a fog.
I mean, they make the same face. It's this every time.
And then like some PA is like literally kicks you out onto the lot.
Your bag in his hand.
And then you have to go out into the world to deal with now even more trauma than you already came in with. And you have shame and judgment. And you think people are going to be like, oh, you're that pregnant whore from Dr. Phil. Or you're that idiot who almost let her friend kill her. Or you're that, or I know so much about your sexual assault. Like, what the fuck?
And it's made your home life even worse. Like, when Emily goes home, luckily the mom is, like, apologizing to her. We don't know what happened with the stepdad.
No.
But we do know that Emily had the baby.
Yes. And Emily says, she goes, look.
Despite what Dr. Phil said, I have an incredible daughter. She is 13, and she is an honor roll student in advanced orchestra, first chair. She gets straight A's. Literally the most thoughtful, empathetic child. She is everything that Dr. Phil did not expect.
She's everything Phil did not expect. Good for you, Emily.
I was like advanced orchestra. First chair is hard. I played the trombone. I was third chair.
And like,
as a senior.
Right.
That's hard.
That is hard.
I also took geometry as a senior. That's a sophomore level math class.
Please,
I know. I can't.
We can't do this. And like, that's really great for Emily, but usually we hear it's like Marcy's story. So Marcy says this totally, they went for help. It totally destroyed her family. Her mental health has been suffering ever since. Her mother's health severely declined. She doesn't even speak to her father. And her brother is in prison for possession of child sexual abuse images. So thanks for fucking nothing, Phil.
Yeah. I mean, and it was like the Phil show that like made it all worse.
And that's how part one ends.
Girl, Goodles is back. I love it when I get to talk about this because Daisy eats this at least once a week. You know how she has mac and cheese night once a week in our house?
Yes.
We have switched from that other stuff to the Goodles, and I actually feel good about giving this to her.
I love Goodles so much. Goodles is like a celebrity in our house. We saw it in the wild at the grocery store. And Mike was like, oh my God, it's Goodles.
You asked for a photo.
Love.
Goodles Mac and Cheese Fam has protein, fiber with prebiotics, and vitamins and minerals from real plant sources.
Yeah, and almost all Goodles products are low glycemic index, so you get steady energy instead of a carb crash.
Yeah. Plus, it's Clean Label Purity Award certified, which means it's been tested for over 400 different contaminants, and Goodles meets their highest standard.
They also have so many flavors. Yep. They're so delicious. They have different shapes. I just love mac and cheese so much, and I love Goodles.
Can I just say this? If you are an adult who loves mac and cheese, that's amazing. But if you have a kid like me that was obsessed with that like other mac and cheese, make this switch and they will not notice. Daisy could never tell the difference. It's as good or better.
It is awesome.
So fam, it's time to get some Goodles for yourself.
We know you'll love them as much as we do.
Yeah, pick up Goodles mac and cheese and pasta on your next shopping trip.
Available nationwide at Target and Walmart, plus many other major grocery stores and retailers. I can attest to that. I
but
see
like,
them all the time.
Be cool. If you see it at the store, give it its space. Don't crowd. Just like ask for a photo if it's appropriate.
Mike was like, it was like the gasp heard around the world. Seriously. He was like, oh my God.
Girl, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack hydration and coffee sponsor.
IQBar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel you need to win your day.
Can I just say we have these all in our pantry, and I use at least one of them every single day, sometimes multiple. I always start with the coffee.
I have to tell you, you have to get that Ultimate Sampler Pack.
Yes.
It's a great way to try all IQBar products and flavors. You get 9 IQ bars, 8 IQ Mix sticks, and 4 IQ Joe sticks. snacks. You really get everything.
And let me talk about these IQ plant protein bars, because I am a protein bar person, but these are the smarter snack choice. They've got plenty of plant protein, tons of fiber, which is my new obsession, and no added sugar.
And IQ Mix is a zero sugar drink mix that hydrates with electrolytes, improves mood, and boosts clarity, which I think we all need these days.
And it also makes you want to drink the water because it is delicious.
That too.
So fam, with over 25,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ Bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees.
Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three, just saying.
And right now, fam, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the ultimate sampler pack, plus free shipping.
To get your 20% off, text TCO to 64,000.
Text TCO to 64,000.
That's TCO to 64,000.
Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
That does not affect the hydration, however.
It does not. So episode two, Evan's like, we knew it was bad. We tried to reach the show for comment. We spoke to their head of professional affairs, and they said the show did nothing wrong.
They gave us the Fox News response.
Quote, Dr. McGraw has a very strong sense of not trying to exploit people. Don't call him that. Call him McGraw or you call him Phil.
Well, that's like when Fox News won that lawsuit by being like, oh, we're not a news network. We're an entertainment network. You can't believe anything Tucker Carlson says. He's an entertainer. He doesn't tell the news. Do you remember that?
And maybe our next president. Like, we'll see.
But do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
It was like a $1 zillion lawsuit for like them talking about like the voting machines or whatever. And they won the lawsuit because they're like, I'm sorry, do you think we're news? Like, we're not journalists, we're entertainment. And they fucking won.
I mean, we have no control over the media anymore.
No,
you know
that
what I mean?
We don't. But that was like however many years ago. But it reminded me of that too, but being like, no, excuse me. Because I Googled it.
We're just here for funsies.
Like, are we? That this guy, Phil, never had a license in California.
This guy, Phil show.
Never had a license in California, where his show was taped, by the way. But in 2002, the California Board of Psychology determined that, like, because he is an entertainer, and not like actually helping people, he didn't need a license.
It's just like, okay, but if you believe in God, someday you're going to have to answer to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're calling yourself Dr. Phil and you're saying that you're going to like bring these families here to help them. And you're absolutely like you're torching these people on national television so you can have a bigger pool.
Fox News is like, I'm sorry, did the news in our name confuse you?
Just like scrolling through my notes. Their response, because Evan says to them, do you have a responsibility to help these people? Quote, of course not. It's a television show. And the other thing, too, they had that in the chamber for decades.
For decades.
They knew they were going to need that response someday.
And they almost, like, loved that he didn't have his license anymore. Because they're like, he's not a real guy. He's some idiot blowhard.
Oh, my God. But it's like, can we then subpoena all of the emails to, like, and all of the promises that were made to all of these people? Because they were told that the doctor is going to help you.
Well, Dave and Marla Thomas are here. They were guests in 2017. And they're going to tell us about their son, DJ.
Never in recent memory have I seen two people that I would more like to spend some time with.
These people are awesome. So when DJ was 23, he was diagnosed with what they say is bipolar 1 schizoaffective disorder. And Marla, the mom, is like,
I can tell you that David and I had exhausted every single solitary option for DJ's care. He needed to be in an inpatient treatment program that was going to cost out of pocket about $10,000 a month. And so it was not doable.
DJ needed inpatient treatment, and it was going to cost $10,000 a month out of pocket. Now, once again, gone through very similar stuff with my brother, I'm here to tell you that that is true.
Mental health treatment is not accessible.
Not only is it not accessible, when you do get it, it might kill you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, like, it's bad all around.
So Dave and Marla are now, like, forced to do this themselves.
Yeah.
And they're like, so DJ is living at home with his parents, and one day— there is what they call a violent episode. And then DJ leaves the house and now DJ is missing.
Now, somehow Dr. Phil, now did like Dave and Marla reach out to Dr. Phil?
I don't know about this, but the show finds DJ.
And I'm like, how did they even know he was missing?
That, I have literally have that same note verbatim.
Yeah.
I don't know if the parents reached out or they just like see someone in distress.
Uh-huh. Because it was in LA, so it could be like a producer just scouting downtown LA.
And they pick up a vulnerable person.
Yep.
And I mean, it's probably that, honestly.
So they say that DJ agreed to be on the show. Now, Dave, the dad, is like, we get it. We know what we're walking into. We know that these shows are exploitive, but they are promising help that is out of our reach. And we made a decision as a family that it was worth it to go on the show to get him the help that he needs.
It was their sacrifice
yes.
to try to get a little bit of a reward. reward. And I want to say, like, that outweighed a risk, but they didn't, they were like, this is, they had no illusions about this. They knew exactly what this was.
Yes.
And their son desperately needs help and their parents, and they're going to do whatever it takes.
And you can see this because we see the episode that he's on. And like, Marla, the mom, is like,
DJ was in a full on schizophrenic episode. You know, DJ, he was delusional. So he was talking about having $700 million in the bank and dating Rihanna and all that. And Dr. Phil was stoking that.
And Dr. Phil is like stoking that. And Marla's like, he wanted DJ to have a full schizophrenic episode on there. And like, mission accomplished.
Would have been great TV.
Yeah.
Because what happens is Phil starts doing a commercial in the middle of the episode talking about this amazing facility called Creative Care. It's in Malibu. Then he just starts parading out these people who work at Creative Care in Malibu. They're so incredible. Oh my God. DJ, you're going to get all the help you need, like all expenses paid. His care will be fully provided for.
For 2 years.
For 2 years. And you're thinking like, holy shit. Like,
and he agrees to go. And like, Dave and Marla in that moment are like, well, we felt like, okay, this was totally worth it.
This,
like,
is why we did this.
Yes.
No. So Marla says that was the start of the nightmare.
Yeah. And so, oh, by the way, this is where Evan, the reporter, she's walking through the office now. And this is the first time we see the stack of pencils in the back of her hair.
Love. I could never do that. It never worked for me. I used to look at the cool girls and envy, like, how do you do that?
But the numbers grow. She starts with like 3. We see her on the subway later. The subway, the T in Boston. She's got new pencils stuck in her hair.
Let me ask you, does she have a tie or is the pencil holding it together?
No, there's like a hair thing that it's literally to hold the pencil, not to hold the bun.
I knew someone in high school who can make the hot, like nothing messy bun that looks perfect.
Oh my God.
With the pen.
There's another shot of reporter Evan getting into her car. She's got new pencils in the hair. And all I could think of was like, does she spend her days looking for her pencils?
Yeah.
Because
they're
like,
up there.
They're right. Like, is she constantly buying pencils and then just show? Like, do you think she gets in the shower in the morning, takes the ponytail down, and 40 pencils fall out?
I mean, I wish, if only. Really are witches. Like, I can't even deny it anymore.
But the thing is, too, like, it's not a gimmick. Like, it's really who she is because she doesn't take them out for
She'll
the
She'll need it later. It's good. They're always good to have.
The sheer number of pencils in her head.
I love that.
I love it so much.
So let's talk about these facilities.
Yeah.
Phil is always saying he's going to send so-and-so to the best fill-in-the-blank treatment center there is. Whatever you have, he's got the best one for it.
Like, Evan shows us a whole bunch of them. Like, he's connected to a bunch of them. And she says their original tipster, the minor celebrity,
who it could be.
That, like, he's got to be profiting off this somehow. And Evan is like, we had the same question.
So it turns out, after Evan looks into it, the situation is even worse than she thought.
Yes.
So let's talk about Anthony Haskins. He's quote, resource director. So he's in charge of setting you up at these treatment centers. Guess what his qualifications are?
I was told that he was in a band with one of Dr. Phil's sons, and Dr. Phil just gave him the job. He didn't have any background in therapy. There was really no experience that would warrant him being that person.
He was in a band with Phil's son.
That's it. Zero.
I didn't call him Dr. Phil again. It feels
Thank
so
you.
Good.
Zero experience in therapy or anything else. This guy has no idea what he's doing.
No, but he's also part of the family, so nobody on set can question him, even though he's like that asshole who just like shows up sometimes, walks in, walks around like he owns the place.
Yeah. Woof. So Anthony, what he really does, though, is like aggressively sell you on one of these places.
Yeah.
It's the Disneyland of treatment, the best of the best. You're going to be so well taken care of. Like, DJ's going to go for 2 years. You don't have to worry about it. And then when he comes out, it's going to be amazing. I mean, the stuff where you're sitting there being like, oh, yes, okay,
right. Yes.
This is my dream.
Yes.
So that ends up, of course, not being the case.
No, and Marla, DJ's mom, they are sold on this place.
Yeah.
Like, DJ wants to go. He's going to go. They feel, they're calling it the Disneyland of aftercare. Like, so he goes. And this, we take a break from that story for a second to meet Wendy McIntyre, who's a public safety advocate. She says, I'm the person who gets called when your child gets sent to rehab and then comes home in a body bag.
Wendy, Jesus Christ. At first, I'm like, could you have softened that up a little bit? But no, the point is that this is what happens. And she does this because she lived it. So she can say whatever
like,
the fuck she
this
wants.
This happened to her.
Yeah.
Her son died. Her son Jared died in a sober living home in 2004. She says,
I've become the Aaron Brockovich of the treatment industry. So if you are holding yourself out as this great place, but you're killing people, I'll be coming for you.
I'm coming for you.
Good for her. Because she says this sober living home that where her son died is called the Safe House. And she goes, ironically.
Yeah.
Like, she's fucking over it. And when you really learn what these places are doing, you should be furious.
I mean, it's very similar to what we were just doing with that guy with the green juices.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Fucking idiot.
Fam, DraftKings Casino is changing the game with Flex Spins.
New players play $5 and get 1,500 Flex Spins, 50 a day for 30 days.
Come on. Then you choose how to play across your favorite games like Huff and More Puff, Cash Eruption, and more.
Download the app now and sign up with code TCO to claim 1,500 Flex Spins on your choice of slots.
The crown is yours in partnership with DraftKings Casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org.
Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. Non-withdrawable spins issued as 50 spins per day for 30 days. Valid for select games only and expire each day after 24 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Ends April 30th. At 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time.
So we learn in 2013, Wendy gets a call by like a neighborhood group who basically are complaining that they live in this like family-oriented cul-de-sac, but it's been invaded by a facility called Creative Care, which apparently has like snapped up a bunch of homes in this little neighborhood, and they're using it as a treatment facility.
And Creative Care is the number one place that Phil promotes. Yeah. They are the self-proclaimed gold standard, the premier facility on drug treatment and mental health. Like, they are the only place to go, is how they're promoting themselves and how they're being promoted on Dr. Phil 5 times a week.
And Wendy tells these neighbors who called her, bitch, get your camera and video everything. And then like the sheer number of vans pulling up and taking people away in body bags is staggering.
It's staggering.
We see it. We see it happening.
And so Wendy goes right to Phil on social media.
On Facebook, Wendy.
Right.
Come on.
And she's tagging him and she's like, stop sending people to Creative Care. Like, shame on you. You have to stop it. So now former clients, she goes viral or whatever. Former clients and employees of Creative Care see Wendy's posts calling out Phil, and they reach out to Wendy and they're like, oh my God, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Finally, someone is saying something.
And we hear some of the messages to Wendy and they're saying like, people are dying. They cannot retain staff. And Wendy, the people who work there are telling Wendy there is a direct connection to the Dr. Phil show through this guy, Anthony Haskins. Because remember, he's the aftercare guy at Dr. Phil. And he's the one that's getting DJ to go to this place. And he's the one that's like selling all the people on this place. What Anthony is doing is he would come in and like do like a little presentation to the staff and then be paid like, we don't even know how much, but presumably a lot of money in cash.
Here's how Creative Care operates. Anthony, they keep them on the payroll, right? They're kept away from clients. They don't have access to any clinical notes. They have no idea what's going on. They're just paying them as a consultant to make sure that the Dr. Phil referrals keep rolling in.
That's the connection between the facility and the Dr. Phil show.
And what they're doing, just to like slow down on it, like there's no supervision at Creative Care. Like Wendy learns that in 4 months, there were 2 deaths at a house with no supervision. So like people who need help are just left to their own devices and they're overdosing or harming themselves or some other awful tragedy that could have and should have been avoided. And it was promised it would be avoided.
And like the whole thing is that like they're giving money to the Dr. Phil show. And so the Dr. Phil show is like, is promoting them on air as like the number one place, even though people are dying left and right.
How can like you look at someone who needs help that way and then just say like, okay, go to this house by yourself with some, with a bunch of other people who are unmedicated or need help who are, or using, like, how do you live with yourself and
I
do
know.
That?
No, because in 2.5 weeks after DJ gets there, he's found on the side of the highway. He'd been kicked out of the program for like saying like dirty things or whatever. His mother tells us he walked from Malibu to downtown LA. I mapped it. It's 28 miles.
Oh my God.
Before he got picked up by a cop on the side of the, nobody called his family.
Nope.
Nobody let him know what was happening.
Like, how could you do that to him?
They promised him 2 years. They kicked him out after 2.5 weeks.
Or he would have wandered out. I'm just saying, because he had a tendency to do that. That's why we're here in the first place. And like, if you're leaving these people in homes like with each other and no supervision at all, like, what are we doing? How can you do that?
And so DJ is taken to jail. He's sentenced to the mental health ward and medicated. He's in prison for 4 months, and Marla, the mom, is trying to figure out how she can get him back into that treatment center because the judge will only allow him to be released from prison if he will resume treatment.
I mean, that is... So now they're stuck.
Right, because they know that he's not getting good care there, but the only way they can get this guy with a mental health problem...
Their son who they love, who they just want to help.
Exactly.
That's all they want.
The only way they can get him out of jail is to send him back to this other place, which is like probably slightly less worse than jail.
And so the parents are calling the show being like, remember all of those promises, like you have to make good on them now.
And no, like nobody cares. Like he was there, he was one of 5 episodes that week. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody is returning her calls.
And they already got the money from Dr. Phil or the promotion they want. So yes. Why do they care?
And the facility agrees to take him back, but if he'll get the injection that will give him his meds for a month. But the parents have to now buy the injection from the facility. So this promise of free care for 2 years is totally out the window. He's back for 3 days and he's kicked out again.
They start talking to me about how much it was costing to feed him and we can't do this and he's inappropriate with... And I said, well, this is what you do. At that point, it is clear to me this whole thing was a facade.
The show promised this was going to be free for 2 years.
They said he was saying inappropriate things. And I'm like, so what? He's there for treatment.
Yes.
I thought you were the gold standard. You're the best of the best. Who cares?
He has schizophrenia.
Of course. He's going to say some shit.
Exactly.
Deal with it. That's your job to deal with it.
But like, this is when it becomes clear to the family that like, oh, they don't care. That two-year thing was just a thing that they said on air to make them look good. We have no recourse to like out them to the public that we didn't get those 2 years. My son is not being treated there.
And David Marlowe, we're already like, oh, we know that they're like going to exploit our son, but we're going to take what we can get to get him help. And they didn't care about that.
Yeah.
But it was even worse. Like they were walking in being like, we know what the show is.
Yeah.
And then like once they really got behind the curtain, they're like, oh, it's a million times worse than we could have imagined.
Yeah. And so now we go to Boston where we meet this guy, Nick. And like the long and the short of this guy, Nick, is that like he went through one of these horrible places called the Kids of North Jersey in 1997.
It's like a torture chamber.
Torture chamber. He's watching like young girls being raped. He's watching like physical abuse, emotional abuse. When he gets out, he realizes that this is an epidemic, that there are places like this all across the country, and that as a survivor, he feels like it's his job to sort of do something about it. And then when he realizes that Dr. Phil is not only sending people to these places, but he's promoting them on his show, he's like, I got to get in touch with them and let them know, in case they don't know, that where they're sending them, they're bad places.
Because not only are people being abused, they're dying.
Yes.
And this guy, Nick, he talks the talk and he walks the walk, because he was speaking on Capitol Hill in like 2009. Like he is getting shit done. So when he goes on the show, because Nick is like, clearly Phil doesn't know.
Right. That must be the answer. Like Dr. Phil, the most trusted man in America?
There's no way Oprah would like stamp approve this episode and all this stuff. And like, he wouldn't be working with this play. He must not know. Nick, because I know about this, I'm going to go on and tell him about it and just like, let him know.
And like the show, they say they're thrilled to have him. Now we get audio of him being on the show.
I don't know where we get this from.
I think Nick recorded it.
Good.
I think it was like a phone in his pocket, because we do see clips of the Dr. Phil show in other places in the documentary, but we don't see it here.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's like a fair use thing where they can use like short clips of it in other moments. Yeah. And it felt to me like Nick must have had like his phone, like, I'm going to record this on my own and then it's mine.
Because what happens is Nick is like, hey, all of this horrible stuff is happening. So Phil turns this into an infomercial to talk about how bad Nick's place was and how amazing Phil's places are and how you should just like trust Phil because he vets these places. And then he says the thing, you know, I hate, where he's like, with every barrel, there are some bad apples.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why don't you do an expose on them, Phil? You can expose them. You have the power to do good here. Why aren't you doing that?
And also, one of the places that Phil is specifically saying, like, this is one of the good ones, Nick is like, 6 people died there last year. And Phil is now threatening him legally.
Listen, be very careful about what you say, because when you say that about programs that have been properly vetted and you make defamatory statements that you can't support, you will be held accountable for that. And you're forewarned.
Be very careful about what you say. You will be held accountable. And if you watch the version that aired, this was all cut out.
He's saying, you cannot make accusations like that. They're going to come for you. People are going to, like, you can hear the anger in Phil's voice that he's, like, being exposed and he knows it. And in the moment, Nick now knows that Phil knew
And Nick is not backing down. And Nick is like, he's talking over me. He's not letting me talk. But you hear Nick getting his points in.
Yeah.
And then when the episode is aired, none of that is on it.
Right. But we have this like kind of shitty audio.
Which is amazing that we have. I'm like, I love that he's like, someday someone's going to make a documentary about this and I'm going to have it. I'm guessing it's his audio.
It could also just be like some whistleblower PA who hated him and was just recording stuff or just like, took that out of the editing room in case. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
But everyone, like a lot of people hated this guy and a lot of people had reasons to want to have a little stockpile of evidence against him. So I wouldn't be surprised.
We're back with Evan on the T, 9 pencils in her hair, I counted.
That's, no.
I don't know. My notes say 9.
Is that right?
I don't know. There was a lot of pencils in the back of her hair.
You counted 9?
She's just holding the T. There's pencils sticking out and she doesn't care who sees it. I love her.
I love it. But did you really count 9?
Well, that's what my notes say. I don't remember. Okay. It was early this morning. I got up at 3:30.
Oh, great. So she's trying to talk to people who are on the show, but she's having a problem because everyone's terrified. And this is a real fear because Phil loves suing people to shut them up. So we learn about this woman, Leah Rothman, who is not here for the doc.
No.
But she was—
But her deposition is.
Yep. She was a longtime producer of the show, and she sued the show for false imprisonment, intentional inflection of emotional distress, and whistleblower retaliation.
This story makes me so angry.
Leah says it, and like one of the other staffers who have like fake names, we don't meet them, like they're confirming this?
Yeah.
And it talks in particular about this meeting where she and a whole bunch of people, she says 300, who work on the Dr. Phil show were put in a single room and Dr. Phil entered the room and demanded the doors be locked.
There was a meeting where 300 employees of the show were put in one single room. And Phil comes in, like, making all these demands, like, demanding the doors locked. And he has security guards in there for intimidation.
He's telling them, nobody can leave. I've got security guards at every exit.
Until I know who did it and you have 10 minutes to come forward. And everyone's like, did what?
Right.
What are you talking about? It turns out someone was trying to sell information to the Daily Mail. But, of course, because they're evil and Phil's evil, they're in bed.
Yeah.
And they're in cahoots. So the Daily Mail was like, hey, Phil, you have a leak in your staff.
Yes, and Phil apparently knew who the leak was and wanted them to, like, out themselves. Locking the staff in a conference room, that is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was doing this knowing who the leak is. So this is like a fear and intimidation tactic to scare the shit out of everyone. Also, where is this room that can fit 300 people? The studio?
I don't even think Evan believes that number. She's like, she says it was 300.
Like,
I know.
Where is it?
Who knows?
Anyway, I believe every last one of you who was there, by the way.
But Leah gets sued. Dr. Phil sues her.
And also, they say that she made a recording of something. They don't tell us what it is. I know what it is.
What is it?
I Googled it. She recorded with her iPhone a 9-second clip of Dr. Phil from a larger archive of unaired footage from the show in an attempt to document an example of his conduct. So she was just like in the editing room and took her phone.
And do we know what it was?
It was just him like yelling on a flight or something. So it was him like not looking great, but she like captured something on her iPhone. I'm like, I don't know why we couldn't know that. It's not
Leah,
that big a deal.
We see you. We love you. Keep recording everything.
But the production company sued her for copyright infringement and won.
It's just but that's why people don't whistleblow.
That's why.
You know what I mean?
And Phil especially, because he has $1 zillion and Oprah behind him, and he sues anyone and everybody, and he wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Evan finally finds a source who will talk to her.
Yeah.
And the source tells her about the doctor, in air quotes, Phil, path to recovery. And it's this like virtual reality goggle system.
This is the most like 2011. I don't know what year this actually was, but he like made a virtual reality where like
a person with addiction puts on the 3D goggles, and there inside the 3D goggles is Dr. Phil.
I've put them in a bar situation. So while they're in rehab, they're sitting talking to me in a bar. Now they're sitting, and this is actually in my backyard.
You could be in rehab, but sit at a bar with Dr. Phil to talk about your problems.
You, like, put on the goggles, and Phil shows up and, like, yells at you until you're better or whatever.
This is just, like, one of his cockamamie ideas. He's got another one later.
But all it is, like, it's a way, it's like a go-between for the money that he's making from all of these facilities.
Right.
So it's like this place called Inspirations. He's like, okay, if you buy my goggles, I'll talk about you on the show, because it's like, oh, this is the place that has the Phil
yes.
The Phil goggles.
Exactly. And that's Phil goggles,
like,
exactly.
So, like, what happens is that, like, Phil is one company, the goggles are another company, the facility is another company, so there's no, like, line from A to B about how money's crossing hands, but that's how he's doing it. It's like money laundering.
I was like,
how much of these goggles, were the goggles $9 million each? Like, how are they expensive enough to make Phil enough money to be this fucking shady about
it? Yeah, like, you don't need to be Evan or Columbo to figure out that, like, this is what's happening. And also, this inspirations place is a fucking torture chamber nightmare.
Yes.
Because over a two-year period, police were called 180 times about missing kids. That's almost twice a week.
But what that tells me is that, like, no, nobody cares. Like, it's just a, it's a front for people to send their troubled kids and pay $15,000 a month or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, no one's actually trying to treat anybody in these places.
Wendy the Advocate's here, however.
Ugh.
And she's fighting against that creative care place.
Yeah.
Because the state suspends their license in 2019. And Wendy calls up the show and she's like, hi, this place doesn't have a license. You can't mention them on the air. Guess what? They continue to do it anyway. Which I guess tracks for someone who let his license and then still goes by Dr. Phil.
And, like, just
he doesn't really care about
licenses.
Doesn't
care at all.
But for the sake of doing something, he fires Anthony, his son's bandmate.
Because he told Anthony, you can't go in there with your PowerPoint and collect $15,000 every weekend anymore, and Anthony's still doing it.
And he was like, okay, Jake's dead, or whatever, and then went in and did it anyway.
Anthony, you had, like, for you, the best job on the planet, like, biting the hand that feeds you. What is wrong with you?
Like, whatever. So as we're wrapping up, we're back with DJ's parents.
Finally, after probably over maybe 10 to 12 years, our son, now he's in a full service program, doing pretty good right now, so.
They fought for 12 years to get him the help he needs. He is finally in a full service program, and they tell us that he's doing well.
Which, I'm like, can you give us the name of that program? Because I feel like that's the one that people
need
to know about.
We need good ones, right?
Because obviously, if they can't afford it, somehow you got him in there. And it, like, you know, like, what'd you do? Like, I want the Dave and Marla documentary. Give me that documentary.
But their son is, like, absolutely a victim. All of these people are, like, Emily, Marcy, Angelique, and the parents, like, Marla and Dave. And, like, to the surprise of no one, however, Phil has been a grifter his entire life.
I mean, like, whatever. Starting back in the 1970s, he was selling fake memberships to a thing called Grecian Health Spa. $150 to $700 bucks a month.
In the 70s, it's a lot of money.
In the 70s, they run it for a couple years. Then, like, it just disappears. It's like, you're buying a membership to this thing that doesn't really exist, and then it just vanishes because it's the 70s. There's no way to fucking trace this stuff.
And so he was doing that, and, like, it's in the paper, and I'm like, so Oprah's either wildly irresponsible and doesn't vet the people she unleashes onto the world, or she doesn't care because she was making money, too.
Can we talk about Shape Up?
Sure.
Shape Up is the other thing that Phil the Pretender did later.
Oh, right.
It was a weight loss supplement, and the marketing was, it's 22 pills that you take every day depending on if you're apple-shaped or pear-shaped. What?
Isn't he pretending to be a therapist? Why is he hawking diet pills?
But then he has to pay $10 million in a settlement because, as Evan says, it doesn't do anything.
It doesn't do anything. But also, like, this is when Oprah's company was producing his show in 2003. Oprah!
Would you
the fuck?
Imagine taking 22 pills a day. What were in those?
No. But again, what qualifications does he have to do this?
I know. So in the end, Evan's story publishes, and they do it over 2 days. And it's like, when the story comes out, it's like the biggest story in the world because it's fucking Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Like, people were starting to get a sense that he was kind of a dick, but people still, like, loved watching it.
Yeah.
So the story comes out. It's all over the media. It's like the biggest story in the world. Evan, and they do two stories, and they want to do a bunch more. Like, they've got all of these victims, all of these producers that have come to them with information. But Phil's attorneys send a letter demanding that they retract the entire story, and they attached a letter to the owner of the Boston Globe. And Evan's like, I've never seen this before.
This was the only time in my career this ever happened. But the Globe told us there was no appetite for a legal fight. And so that was it. The project got shut down.
The Boston Globe caved. My jaw was on the ground. You're spotlight.
I know.
Why are you being so fucking spineless?
I know.
Pulitzer Prize winning spotlight. What are you doing? The Boston Globe is backing down?
I know.
Since when?
And Evan says, the Globe said, we don't have an appetite for a legal fight.
I was floored
and
that
I
they
think
caved.
It broke her heart too. Like, I think that it really shook her sense of, like, people doing the right thing in the world.
Of course.
You know?
Yes. And so, like, in the wake of this article, though, like, so many other reports have come out. There are just so many allegations against him, like sexual harassment, defamation, abuse in the workplace, what he did to Britney Spears back in the day, what he did to Shelley Duvall back in the day.
Right.
Like, look all this shit up. It's terrible. He has tons of lawsuits and, like, all of this shit. And, like, I just can't believe, because the show ends in 2023 and I'm like, he was on the air for 25 years?
I know. He launches, by the way, with his wife, Robin, that's her in the picture. They launch Merritt Street Media in 2024 and 2025 it files for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And accused by our production partners of, quote, years-long fraudulent scheme. Like, he's been doing this since the 70s.
Yeah. Oprah.
You know, I know.
I am so, like, sick and tired of no accountability for that with between him and Dr. Oz. Like, the shit and trauma that has been unleashed is really, like, needs to be discussed. And, like, where is she?
I know.
Where is
she? I mean, she's out there. I see her, like, every day on the TikTok.
Has anyone ever asked her, like, what's up with Dr. Phil? Like, did you know?
I don't think Oprah puts herself in positions where she's not the highest authority in the room. Like, I don't imagine, like, who would Oprah sit down with for, like, the heavy hitting interview?
Well, that I find that to be a problem.
I couldn't agree more, but I think it's intentional because I think especially in this day, in this day and age with Dr. Oz, a major part of the federal government, like, yeah. I think there would be a lot of hard questions for her.
So she's just hiding behind her billions of dollars?
And Gayle King.
Great. Great.
Oh, girl, we did Dirty Rotten Scandals, the Dr. Phil show, episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah, that show by a guy named Phil.
Join us on the Patreon, fam. We've got full video episodes now, starting with the Rocky Mountain Mortician murders.
Yes.
So fun.
So crazy.
If you like video, you're going to find us there. What's the other thing?
YouTube and Patreon, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So also find us on the YouTube. We've got over 250,000 subscribers. Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Come hang out with us. It's so fun. I love our YouTube videos.
Yeah.
What are we doing next?
Wild Boys, Strangers in Town.
What is that?
Do you know
about
this? It's on Paramount Plus.
Oh, yes. I listened to this podcast when it came out years ago.
The two brothers, like, emerged from the woods in Canada and claiming they were raised off the grid. And so this is the story of what happened and how they got there and all of the insanity.
A wild story.
It is crazy and infuriating. So come join us, won't you?
All right. We'll stay tuned for the trailer for that.
All right. We love you.
We love you. Bye.
Except Phil. Bye.
Except Phil. Bye.
They were dubbed the Wild Boys.
So-called Wild Boys.
After they caught the country's attention with an unbelievable tale.
It was a definite split in the community.
And one was finding out who they were. And then there was a group of people, including myself, that were trying to help them. The younger one was extremely thin.
The situation was getting dire.
People started feeling unsafe.
In my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, they've been with my kids. You know, they know where I live. They'd never been to school.
There's no driving records, criminal records, nothing tangible.
What do you know about your parents? Are they criminals?
Maybe this is all lies.
People wanted answers.
I was getting more and more frustrated. It was my job to get to the bottom of it.
Are they criminals?
What are they hiding from?
Maybe they're in a cult.
It's not my job to tell you the truth.
Something was wrong. The police were looking for us.
After months and months and months, we got this email that changed everything.
That's where it started to be like, I think they know a little more than what they're telling us.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
I like things my way. My coffee, my schedule, and my treatment. So I talked to my doctor about self-injecting with the VivGuard Hytrulo prefilled syringe, which contains efgartigimod alpha and hyaluronidase QVFC. It's injected under your skin, subcutaneously. It means I can inject in my space, on my time. It's my treatment, my way. Visit VivGuardMyWay.com. That's VYVGARD MyWay.com. And talk to your doctor about VivGuard Hytrulo, brought to you by Argenix.